V-minus 91. Caserma Florenzi, Milan, Italy. Emma ran into Dan's arms as soon as the door swung open, giving him no time to meet her halfway or do anything except smile at the confirmation that she was okay. "Is it true?" she asked him, running a gentle finger over the back of his neck. "They're back?" "Close enough to send me a message," he said. "It was the dream kind, like when I saw the triangle that led back to Lolo." Emma turned towards Frank, the only stranger present other than a junior-looking Italian officer of some kind who looked greatly out of his depth. Immediately, Frank closed the door. "You're going to ask how we knew," he began, "so I'll save everyone a few minutes and tell you that a small device was implanted in Dan's neck during one of his monthly tests back home. It was designed to alert us to any unusual sensations of pain. In other words, it was designed to immediately alert us to any contact events."
"You put something inside me?" Dan asked, enraged at the violation.
Frank nodded curtly. "And it worked."
"But when I woke up, your goons were there," Dan went on, "instantly. Have there been agents hiding outside my house every night all this time in case the messengers contacted me again?"
Emma was shaking her head, disgusted at the thought of how closely they had evidently been surveilled.
"We've been monitoring you for your own good,"
Frank replied, raising his voice.
"Dan, like it or not, your safety is a national security priority. We can't allow you to fall into the wrong hands, and we can't allow you to do anything that might lead you into trouble. Sleepwalking, venturing into cornfields in the middle of the night, as our established point of contact, your well-being is extremely important to us."
"And who exactly is us?" Dan blasted. "The US, the GCC? Because something tells me your bosses won't be calling Ding anytime soon to tell him the messengers are back. Something tells me that my interests aren't really what you care about here. You know, there's a reason the messengers go through me, because they don't trust any of you. And why would they? I don't trust any of you men in black wannabes, and we're not just the same species and the same nationality. My taxes pay your damn salaries."
Frank shrugged.
"What do you want me to tell you? That the content of your communications with the messengers, one way or two way, isn't an important national security issue? We're all adults here, Dan, so let's be real about this."
"So what about me?" Emma asked. "Do I have one of these pain tracking chips in my neck? Let's be real about that."
"You do," the man admitted. Emma looked squarely at Dan.
"Tell him nothing. Until these microchip implants are out, tell him nothing."
"Does Harris know about the implants?" Dan asked, surprising even himself by caring.
"No," Frank said. "As your personal liaison, he knew no more than necessary about anything. But speaking of Harris, how did you know so much about him? He can't have told you any of it, and I'm sure you understand the security
Stop changing the subject," Dan interrupted.
The real answer was relatively mundane. He had covertly placed a tracking chip on the collar of Harris's blazer during one of their monthly meetings in Colorado, and before long it very straightforwardly showed Dan the location of the man's suburban home and top-secret workplace. There was a hint of hypocrisy in the fact that Dan had tracked Harris's movements, but would have felt betrayed if Harris had been party to the reverse process, but no one could deny that attaching a basic tracker to a piece of clothing was a world away from medically inserting a pain-measuring device beneath an unknowing target's skin. And mundane or not, Dan wasn't giving Frank any answers.
"Bring me a phone so I can call Timo and find a doctor he trusts to get these things out of our necks," Emma said. "Because we're serious. Until they're out, Dan's telling you nothing."
Dan gulped and pulled her in close, whispering as quietly as he could that the message was very time-sensitive and had to reach President Slater as soon as possible.
"Forget Timo for now,"
Emma decided, aiming the words at Frank.
"Get Slater on the line. Dan will talk to her."
After 5 minutes that felt like 50, Frank returned once more with a phone in his hand. Dan had told Emma nothing in the interim, understanding that sharing the content of his dream would have risked making her a target for some potentially questionable interrogation methods.
Dan looked at Emma as Frank held the phone out, as though asking if she would mind doing the first of the talking. She took the phone.
Hello?
Ah, Emma, President Slater said, slightly surprised. The two weren't on the friendliest of terms, given everything that had happened in the last few years, including a few tense standoffs and a fruitless midnight raid on Dan's home that still had Slater and his family's bad books, but Emma could see why Ms. Ford might have felt overly formal.
First of all, Slater continued, let me apologize for what you've been put through. The first I heard about any of this was when I received a call asking if Dan's request to have you by his side could be granted. I didn't authorize any of this.
Did you authorize the chips they put in our necks? Emma asked. Or the 24-hour surveillance we've been under for the past year?
I do know that you've been under close surveillance, but at no point did I sign off on subdermal implants to track your pain levels. I learned of those implants during the phone call I just mentioned, when I asked how the agents could be absolutely sure Dan really had received a message. But Emma, you know better than anyone that I don't make every decision at every level. I apologize again for how this has been handled, but as for what we can control right now, I gather Dan wants to tell me something?
He does, Emma said, taking the apology for what it was worth, but seeing no need to acknowledge it.
But would you mind telling Frank and his friend to give us the room?
Frank scoffed at the notion and shook his head in disbelief, but when Emma handed him the phone, his expression quickly confirmed that the unwanted order had indeed come. He didn't argue, clearly and understandably less used to dealing directly with the President of the United States than Emma had become in recent years. He left the phone on the desk and sulked out of the room, with the bewildered Italian officer he'd brought along to ensure some form of international presence, as per Slater's earlier order. Dan looked at the phone for a few seconds before picking it up, then wasted no more time in getting to the point. I would have told you this right away if those guys hadn't taken me like they did, he began, because this is the most urgent message I've ever gotten. Emma stood anxiously beside Dan, currently as unaware as Slater of what he was going to say next.
Are you in Buenos Aires yet? He asked.
Almost, Slater replied. Why?
Will you be staying at the Gravesen?
No.
Dan hesitated, more than a little surprised by this.
Well, are you scheduled to be there tomorrow morning at 11?
How do you know that?
Slater asked, an automatic question to which she already knew the answer.
And you're supposed to be meeting with the Japanese Prime Minister, right?
The sound of President Slater gulping came through the phone. No verbal reply was needed.
Listen to me, Dan implored. If you go to that meeting, you'll be taken hostage by the Geosovs. I don't know how in the hell they're going to pull it off, but they are. And they'll unfurl a huge flag from a window on the top floor on the right as you look up from outside. That's all I know. It came to me in a dream. Or I should say the messengers showed it to me in a dream. And when I tried to run into the hotel, the pain got so strong that it woke me up and knocked me out of bed. Before I could make sense of anything, your goons grabbed hold of me and...
They're not my goons,
Slater said, her voice far hollower than usual.
But Dan, thank you for sharing this. I'll see to it that your implants are removed whenever is convenient for you. We both know that you can't go back to leading a normal life, but please don't be under any illusions that I think things have been handled acceptably so far. I'll also let you know what our security services find during the full sweep of the Gravesen that I'm about to order. Would you like us to arrange a flight, or do you want to stay for the rest of your week in Italy?
We can't stay here after this, Dan said. But after what just happened, I'd rather get Timo's staff to arrange a flight with a pilot I trust. Thanks all the same.
Very well. Thank you, Dan. And please know that I'm sorry for all of this. Before you go, could you pass me over to Emma for a second?
Dan handed the phone to Emma and gazed at the wall in a fuzzy kind of overwhelmed relief. He had gotten the message across to the person who needed to hear it most, but he would never get used to the fact that he was in a position to be conversing directly with President Slater. He didn't like her. He couldn't like someone who had ordered a raid on his home during his last stay in Italy. But in recent times, he had come to dislike her a lot less than was once the case. And Slater's tone, one of something like fearful gratitude, added a very human element to a woman whose position often made her seem untouchably detached from the real world of feelings and vulnerability.
Her final direct apology, the "I'm sorry," rather than the previous dancing around the words attempts to express regret for the actions of others, hit Dan particularly hard. He was never going to not tell Slater that her life was in danger, but he now felt a surprisingly warm gladness that he had. "Of course he understands that," Emma spoke into the phone, rolling her eyes as Dan watched on.
"Yep. Okay. Obviously. So you'll let us know what happens with the sweep of the hotel, and you'll definitely make sure none of these grounds agents bother us again?" "Uh-huh. Good. Well, just stay safe, okay? The last thing the world needs right now is something happening to you."
Emma walked to the door and opened it, handing the phone to Frank before closing it again and returning to Dan.
"What was the part about me understanding something?" he asked.
"She just wanted to make sure we know that this has to stay quiet. For now, all of it, even the fact that the messengers are close, at least until tomorrow passes without any trouble, that has to stay between us. And the part about the planned hostage taking, I think that one's going to be a forever kind of secret, okay?"
"I've kept bigger secrets than that," Dan said, grinning slightly despite the gravity of the topic. Frank burst back into the room a few seconds later, evidently frustrated at having been kept out of the loop, but with no choice but to obey a direct order from his commander-in-chief.
"I'll take you back to Fiore's place," he sighed.
"Sure thing," Dan said. Frank held the door open as they exited the room.
"Am I ever going to find out what the messengers told you tonight? Or is this the kind of thing I should hope to never hear about again?"
"The second one,"
Emma said. Frank glanced between them as though seeking a second opinion.
"What she said," Dan confirmed. "On this one, no news is good news."